Okay, welcome back. We're on Daf Zion. We're on Daf Zion Omud Aleph. Towards the top. It's another. This first parak is rather agada heavy, which is okay. You know, people. Although interestingly, part of the agada is a disparaging line about Agada, so we'll come to that momentarily. It's okay. You know, late in the evening, people aren't always in the mood for the heavy lifting, some other parts of Gemara. So we have this nice piece of Agada, which relates to the themes we've been talking about: rain and Tchiyat HaMetim and metaphors of rain and all types of things. So here we are. Here, Omar Rabbi Abahu, Gadol Yom Hagshamim Mitchiyat HaMetim. The rainy day is greater than the day of the revival of the dead. That sounds pretty serious. The Ilu Tchiyat HaMetim LaTzadikim. Why is the day that the rain arrives greater than the day that the dead will be revived? Because the rain is beneficial to everyone, to the righteous and the wicked. It benefits the whole world. And Tchiyat HaMetim, only the righteous merit. So from a certain perspective, rain is greater even than the revival of the dead. And this contradicts the statement of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, "Mitoch shehi shkula ketchiyat hametim kfuaha kavuha betchiyat hametim." The Gemara had asked, why? This is the Gemara in Brachot, which we've learned together many years ago. A Gemara in the fourth parak of Brachot. Why we say Mashiv HaRuach Amrit HaGashem in the bracha of Mechaye HaMetim. So Yosef says, because the ability to cause rain with its life-giving properties is equated to the revival of the dead. So you see the two statements are in contradiction. Rav Yosef says rain and revival are equated, and Rabbi Abahu said that rain is even greater than Tchiyat HaMetim. In all cases, it certainly sounds doesn't it seem like something of an exaggeration? I mean, you know, rain is wonderful, and without rain, we'd be in trouble. And, you know, it's a theme of the whole Masechta, the importance of rain. But
also more common than the revival of the dead.
But it's more common. But maybe that's the point. In other words, revival of the dead is always used as a kind of metaphor for the most miraculous, the most beyond the natural order that we can imagine. And rain is, of course, something that doesn't strike us as, even when there's a long drought and there's long anticipation for rain and the rain finally comes, we don't necessarily experience it as miraculous. We experience it as the natural order that arrived slightly belated. But maybe that's the point of the Gemara. Whether you say it's as big a deal as the revival of the dead, or whether you say it's an even bigger deal than the revival of the dead, the point is that it's a big deal. And that's the point. The Gemara will momentarily ask a question about, like, when we use these kinds, when Chazal used these kinds of equivalencies and metaphors, and, you know, what did it mean? When Chazal say that embarrassing someone in public is equivalent to murdering them, what does that mean to say a statement like that? What does it mean? What's that rule, David? You'll know. What's the name for that rule that, like, in a debate, you know, this is Ma'asim Shebechol Yom on Facebook these days, or any other social media platform, particularly in light of the American elections. Sheyavo b'mehera v'yameinu v'yavur. What's that rule for? You lose the argument as soon as you invoke Nazis, or as soon as you compare someone to Hitler.
Right.
What's this? It's the something rule.
Right. He actually, the guy who said it actually turned out when they were talking about Charleston, he said, "Yeah, you can actually quote this now because they're actually Nazis. It's not like it's always inappropriate."
But the point is that saying that
Godwin's law. Godwin's law.
Godwin's law. So the point is that's the way language works. That's the way metaphor works, right? To say that murdering someone, to say that embarrassing someone is a tantamount to murdering him, we don't mean that in the strictest possible sense. That is, if I see the Din Rodeif, if I see that Reuven is chasing after Shimon to murder him, I'm allowed to take action, even very, very drastic action, to stop Reuven from committing that murder, even if it's going to cost Reuven his life. That's Din Rodeif. So we don't say, if I see that you're going to make a joke and you're going to embarrass someone else, that I'm allowed to kill you. That's how metaphors work. They communicate parts of ideas, but it's never a full equivalency. So Amar of Yehuda, Gemara goes on. Amar Rav Yehuda, Gadol Yom Hakshamim Ki Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. The day the rains arrive is tantamount, is tantamount to the day the Torah was given. It is as great as Gadol Ki Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. Shne'emar Ya'arof Kamatar Likhi. The pasuk in, where's Steve?
Ha'azinu,
yafe. Let me just look to see. Oh, welcome to, I see Ash here. I think you're new to us, so welcome. Let us know where you're joining us, from. Put a note up in the chat. Kamatar likhi. Hashem says that my lekach, my message, my teaching is... It my message, God says, my lekach, my teaching will drip down like rain. The communication of Torah from Hashem is compared to the falling of the rain. Lekhi yarov kematar lekhi. My teaching will drip down upon the earth like the rain. Ein lekach ela Torah. And the meaning of the word lekach in that verse in Hazinu is Torah. God's teaching, God's command is Torah. Shne'emar ki lekach tov natati lachem torati al tazovu. Right? A pasuk in Mishlei, that it's a good lekach, it's a good teaching that I have given to them, to you. Torati al ta'azobu, do not abandon my Torah. So that's the proof text that shows that the word lekach is Torah. So if lekach is Torah, and if lekach falls from the heavens like the rain, so that compares Torah to rain. Rava Amar, yoter miyom shnitna bo Torah. So Rav Yehuda said that rain is equivalent in greatness to the day the Torah was given. And Rava says it's even greater than the day the Torah was given. Shne'emar ya'arof kamatar likhi. My message, my teaching, Yarov Kamatar Lekhi, my teaching falls like rain. Mi nitna bami, mi nitla bami. So what's the mashal and what's the nimshal? What's the thing and what is it being compared to? In other words, when you have this kind of A equals B, what direction does it flow in? right? Which of the two sides of the equation is nitla, is dependent, is hanging on the other? So if the Torah is compared to rain, so rain is the home base. If embarrassing someone is compared to murder, which is really more so? Forget the moral lesson of not embarrassing anyone. In reality, which is more severe, murdering someone or embarrassing them?
Probably murdering them.
Not probably. There's no such thing. Murdering someone is more severe than embarrassing someone. And when Chazal say that embarrassing someone is like murdering them, is equivalent to murdering them, put an asterisk there and say, not exactly. After all, as I said, the Din Rodef doesn't apply. You know, we know that in a lifeboat ethics, right? You know, the stuff of NCSY Shabbatons. If we tell you, we have a gun to your head, God forbid, and say, you know, you can either embarrass this person or I'm going to shoot you in the head. Oh, boy, you embarrass them. You talk about how big their nose is, how ugly they are, how they smell, whatever it takes. It's not Yahareg Va'al Yavor. You don't have to submit to the death sentence in order not to violate it. As serious as embarrassing people, as serious a violation of the Torah as embarrassing people is. So we say that embarrassing people is like murder, which is the actual thing, and which is the thing which is merely a comparison. Murder is it. So if we say that Torah is like rain, rain is the home address from which we're extrapolating a message. So Rava is saying that's how you know that rain is even greater than the day the rains arrive is even greater than the day the Torah was delivered. Right? Because the rains here are the nimshal, and the Torah is the mashal. The Torah is the parable, and the rain is the constant. So Rava Amar, Ktiv Yarov Kamatar Lekhi. The Torah, the Gemara doesn't resolve these machlokas. The machlokas between whether or not rain is greater than Tchiyat HaMetim or is equivalent to Tchiyat HaMetim, whether rain is greater than the day the Torah was given or merely equivalent to the day the Torah was given. These are matters of Agadah. And the Torah does not feel, the Gemara does not feel obligated to resolve the machloket. Right? This is one of the enduring teachings of Rabbi Soloveitchik. Which he said on numerous occasions, but most famously, the beginning of a series of shiurim on Pirkei Avot. That in Pirkei Avot, well, actually, I have this here on the screen because I was about to use it for something else, but it's relevant here also. Here at the beginning of Pirkei Avot, for example, and there's many examples we can bring, there's a machloket. Yossi ben Yoezer, Ish Sredav, Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim, Kiblu Mehem. They were among the Zugot that stood as partners in the transmission of Torah. Yossi ben Yoezer, Ish Sredav, Omer, Yehi Veitcha Beit Vad L'Chachamim. Vayehi Metabek Ba'afar Raglehem. Vahave Shoteh B'Tzama Et Igrehem. Your home should be a gathering place of the sages. You should literally roll around in the dust of their feet, meaning you should attach yourself, you should associate with the righteous wise, and you should drink with thirst their words. So what's the kind of social environment you should build in your home? A rather highfalutin intellectual gathering of the Chachamim. Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim Omer, Yehi Veitcha Patuach Lervacha. The doors of your home should be wide open. You shouldn't be checking anyone's bagrut scores, SAT scores, IQ test before they walk into your home. Right? You need not create a home which is only a gathering place of the wise, and the poor and the lowly should be b'nei bayit, should be welcome and members of your household. These are two divergent views of which kind of home you should build.
Well, I don't know that they contradict each other. I mean, it could be both.
Well, in theory, you can find a balance, but that's not what it sounds like.
Okay.
One says your home should be a Beit Vad L'Chachamim. The other one says, Beitcha Patuach L'Revacha, V'yu Ani'im V'nei Veitecha. And even though wisdom and wealth are not directly correlated, they very often overlap. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says the Gemara doesn't need, the Mishnah doesn't need to say, and the Halacha is like Yossi ben Yochanan, or like Yossi ben Yoezer. Because in matters of Deot, in matters of Hashkafa, there's no Psak Halacha. There are different legitimate views. As opposed to matters of ritual law, where we have to say, there's a machlokus, whether you can do this on Shabbat or you can't do it on Shabbat. Right? And at a certain level, we say, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. In the halachic parlance, in the halachic debate, there's truth to both sides. But nevertheless, we determine one normative halacha. Right? This is the way it is, even though it's not unanimous opinion. You know, the Gemara, we learned it, the Gemara in Chulin says, you can have chicken parmesan. So machlokas in the Gemara, whether or not the prohibitions of meat and milk apply to chicken or not. We, of course, hold that it does apply to chicken. Midrabanan, according to the rabbinic law. But there is an opinion in the Gemara that you can eat chicken and meat together. We don't paskin that way. Right? We determine one normative law. But when it comes to matters of hashkafa and worldview and outlook, so that there's room for plurality. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik says. In Avot, there's no bottom line psak halacha. So in these machlokasin about whether or not there's no nafkamin, like what difference does it make? Like what would be the practical halachic difference between the two opinions about whether the rain is equivalent to Tchiyat HaMetim or is even greater? There is no practical halachic difference. So beyond the fact that there's no practical halachic difference for which we have to determine one opinion is correct or the other is incorrect, these are matters of hashkafa, how we should look at the occurrences in the natural world, which very often we overlook. We overlook the miraculous nature of them. And the machlokas in the Gemara is it a really big deal or is it an even bigger deal? Is it an even bigger deal than that? Give me a second, let me look at the chat here. So Ashira, again, tell us, where are you joining us from? Your microphone is open. Do you have a microphone? Can you speak? Okay.
Twice.
Switzerland. How nice. Oh, even better. So Cecil, before we come to see you in Keturah, we're going to take a trip to Switzerland to have a tiul to see Ashira. And then we'll come to Keturah afterwards. Ashira, you're correct. The Gemara earlier on Daf Bet has this idea that Hashem keeps certain keys in his own hand. The key to childbirth, the key to rain, and the key to the revival of the dead. And because these three ideas are all connected, I actually spoke about this in the very first shiur, and also it came up again last week. But you're pointing to that particular source. Okay, let's go on. Rava raises a contradiction. Ketiv yarov kamatar lekhi uketiv zol ketal imrati. Right, the pasuk says that God's message falls down like rain, and it also flows forth like dew. You know, there's two, we spoke earlier about how dew is different than rain, how rain is different than dew. So why is the Torah sometimes compared to rain, and why is it sometimes compared to dew? So, im talmid chacham hagun hu ketal. if he's a, there's this idea which the Gemara is going to keep using here now. If of a Talmid Chacham Hagun, to be a Talmid Chacham, to be a student of the wise, to be a scholar. Talmid Chacham is sometimes also like synonymous with rabbi. It doesn't have to be. To be a Talmid Chacham is a mark of knowledge. Someone can have mastered Shas and Poskim and be a Talmid Chacham in the intellectual sense that they possess the knowledge, but yet not somehow represent the values and the behavior that we would expect from a Talmid Chacham. So Chazal had this idea of a Talmid Chacham Hagun, a proper Talmid Chacham, and a Talmid Chacham She'eno Hagun, an improper or a misbehaving or a miscreant Talmid Chacham. So if the Talmid Chacham is proper, is worthy, so then his Torah is compared to rain. His Torah is compared to dew. Kimlav or fehu kamatar. And if not, his Torah is compared to rain. Which kind of rain? A very destructive rain. The pasuk said ya'arof kamatar likhi. The word ya'arof means what?
To behead,
like egla arufa, right? It can snap the neck, right? Ya'arof kamatar likhi. This is not the pshat of the pasuk. The pshat of the pasuk is that it drips down, the rain falls down. But using this idea of the egla arufa, you know, the ceremony where if the dead body is found, the city elders take a young halfling out to the riverbank and they decapitate it, right? So the rain can come so strong it can snap your neck, it can be destructive. So if you're listening to the Torah of a Talmid Chacham She'eno Hagun, an improper Talmid Chacham, it can be destructive. It can be like one of these, what do you call it, like a flash flood that wipes everything away. And if you're listening to the Torah of a Talmid Chacham Hagun, so that's like the tal, that's like the do. What does Rashi say? Tiv tizol katal de mashma nachat. It comes gently, it comes nice. It comes even like, you know, like if you ever out, the other morning I woke up early, on Sunday, the day after we changed the clocks. So I woke up early according to the new clock. You know, so I was outside in the backyard a little before 6 a.m. And, you know, it's so nice out and it's a nice chill in the air. But there's like this dampness. You don't even notice it. It kind of like creeps up on you, the dew, right? It's the difference between the rain. That's the Torah of a Talmid Chacham. It's kind of organic. It just kind of like flows out of him. It just, you know, it's just kind of like he's got his own climate about him. If you look out, we were looking out before, those of us here in Gush Etzion, if you look across the way at Neve Daniel, so Neve Daniel has already started its foggy days, its foggy nights. And if you look out on the hill, it looks like there's a serving of whipped cream put over Neve Daniel. Neve Daniel, for those of you outside, that we live in Efrat, which is in a hill, on the top of a hill. And then there's this steep valley that goes down to the next hill where the next town over is Neve Daniel. That hill, because it's on the, not the continental divide, what's the word for it?
It's on the
geographic.
I think it is the continental divide. That's what I've heard.
The continental divide. So it has its very unique.
It's part of the Kav Parashat HaMayim, probably.
The Kav Parashat HaMayim. That if the rain falls on one side of it, the mountain, it comes down this way, down to the Dead Sea. And if it falls on the other side, it goes down to the Shvela. But the mountaintop itself has this very unique meteorological character to it. It's always foggy. That you can look out and see this layer of fog just clinging, clutching to the top of this mountain. So fog and tal are not the same thing, but they're related. This idea that like a Talmid Chacham has tal, it's just kind of this natural emanation of his being. Is Torah just, I mean, it's not a good metaphor because it has such a pejorative sense to it, but almost like to say he perspires Torah. He schwitzes Torah. It's just coming out of his pores. That's what tal is. It just kind of comes right out of the air organically, as opposed to rain, which kind of falls down with a certain amount of force. That's my pshat of what the Gemara is saying. But if you learn Torah is compared to rain, and Torah is compared to dew. If you study Torah from a proper teacher, it's like dew. It's gentle, it's pleasant. And if you study Torah from a non-proper teacher, even if he or she has a lot of knowledge, it potentially has the destructive force of a strong rain. So Tanya Haya Rabbi Bana'a Omer, Kol Ha'osek B'Torah Lishma, Toratona Asek Lo Sam Chayim. Now, picking up on this idea that there are some people who are more appropriate and some people who are less appropriate teachers of Torah. Hold on, where are we? Here. Let me just scroll up. So if you study Torah Lishma, if you study Torah sincerely, if you study Torah without some ulterior motive, so the Torah becomes an elixir of life, a sam chayim. Shneamar etz chayim hi lamachazikim ba, right? The Torah is the tree of life. Va'omer refuot tieh l'sharecha, right? That the Torah is a healing, has healing properties for your body. Va'omer ki motzai matza chayim. He who finds me. Finds life. That's a pasuk in the Mishnah. V'chol ha'osek b'Torah shelo lishma, but anybody who studies Torah with insincere motives, not for the sake of, well, it's sometimes hard to figure out what's lishma and what's shelo lishma. But if you study Torah for some ulterior motive, you study Torah without the intention that it's going to have a positive effect on your character. Naset lo sam hamavit, then your Torah becomes a poison. Shneemar ya'arov kamatar likhi, and that's how we understood that verse, that the Torah, the lekach, the message, comes down like a destructive rain. Ve'ein arifa ela hariga, and arifa is a synonym for murder, for death. Shne'emar ve'arfo sham et ha'egla benachal v'chule. That's the egla arufa. Ashira, I see what you mentioned in the chat about dew, but dew is not always left. I don't know about in Switzerland, but dew is not always the leftover after the rain. Here in Eretz Yisrael, where we don't generally have rain the whole summer, we don't have rain from before Passover until after Sukkot. Nevertheless, we still have dew. There is moisture that you wake up in the morning and there's dew out on the grass in the morning. So I'm not sure that dew is the leftover rain, at least not in this climate. Omer le'Reb Yirmiyah le'Reb Zeira, Leit Mar Litnei. Rabbi Yirmiyah invited Rabbi Zeira to come and give a shiur. Come and teach us something. So Omer le'Chalish Chalash Lavoy. I'm old. I'm weak. I'm tired. I can't come to give a shiur. V'lo yachilna. I'm unable. So lema mar milta da agadata. Okay, so you can't give a shiur. So teach some agada. And as you see, this is what I mentioned earlier. The idea that Agada is the light lifting, right? You're not up to preparing a proper lesson, but you could say over an Agada. So this is the Agada. Omer le achi. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, mai dichtiv. What does the pasuk mean? Ki ha'adam etz ha'sadeh. This is a well-known pasuk, which is often used and misused. It's become the slogan of the Jewish environmentalism movement. The Torah is talking about, in Parshat Kitavo, Kitavo or Kitetze? Steve?
Kitetze.
Trying to remember, I think it was Kitetze, yeah.
The Torah is talking about Kitetze Milchama Alevecha. It's talking about warfare. When you surround an enemy city, you're not allowed to wantonly destroy the fruit trees. And the Torah says, "Ki adam etz ha'sadeh," is the tree a person? Right. In other words, in war, unfortunately, you sometimes have to kill enemy combatants. That's what war is. We send soldiers out to war. Except in Switzerland, we send soldiers out to war, and we know the cost of war is lost. And our side has to sometimes kill the soldiers on the other side, and we know that some of our soldiers, Rahman al-Islam, will also be killed.
Shoftim.
What?
Shoftim.
Shame on us.
Yeah.
But trees, like the tree isn't dangerous. In other words, sometimes you have to kill the other enemy because if you don't kill him, he's going to kill you. But a tree doesn't do anything. So the idea that you're going to go into a city and just wantonly, you know, destroy all the natural resources of that city, the Torah does not allow such warfare. So the Torah says, "V'chi adam etz ha'sadeh." Ella mishum dichtiv. Hold on a second. Let's make place.
Right below the arrow.
Ella mishum dichtiv ki mimenu tochel v'oto lo tichros. So why you shouldn't destroy the tree? Because you can eat from it. You can eat its fruit, and you shouldn't chop it down. V'chtiv oto tashchit v'karata. But about other trees, it says, in the next pasuk, it says, those trees that don't give fruit, those trees you can destroy and you can chop down. Ha-ketzad, why is some trees you can chop down and other trees you can't chop down? Ha-ketzad, im talmid chacham hagun hu, mimenu tochel v'oto lo tichrot, v'im la v'oto tashchit v'karata. So the Torah does commit, as the Torah takes the verse out of its literal context. The literal context is saying trees are not people. But midrashically, we read it, in other words, it's a rhetorical question. V'chi ha'adam etz ha'sadeh? Is the tree a person that you have to chop it down? It's not posing you any danger. But midrashically, we read it as ki ha'adam etz ha'sadeh. A person is like a tree. How is a person like a tree? Some trees give fruit, some trees don't give fruit. Right? Some Talmidei Chachamim give fruit. They give nourishment through the proper Torah that they're giving. And those have to be treated properly. And some Talmidei Chachamim don't give the kind of nourishing teaching that's necessary. And those you should chop down, not literally. But meaning you should sever your tie, the teacher-pupil connection. You should sever that tie. You should chop it down and not learn from such an unworthy teacher. Omer Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina, my dichtiv barzel be barzel yachad. Just like, how do you sharpen two knives, one against the other? Right? Barzel be barzel yachad. Two blades of iron sharpen each other. Lomar lacha, Ma barzel ze echad mechadeid et chaveiro, af shnei talmidei chachamim mechadeidim ze et ze b'halacha. How do you become a proper talmid chacham? By chavruta. The idea of learning together. Right? The idea either of learning one-on-one or learning together in a group, learning teacher to student, student to teacher to student, the student becomes a teacher and teaches the next person. That's what, you know, Rabbi Bravender always teaches us. That everybody who learns Torah is obligated to teach Torah. And, you know, sometimes people think they don't know all that much. But let me tell you, if you're here, if you can hear my voice, you already know more than 90% of the Jewish world. So, I mean, you could teach somebody something. And that's this image of the mutually beneficial two knives sharpening each other against each other. That's what comes about through authentic Jewish learning. Omar Rabbi Barbar Chana, Lama Nimshlu Divrei Torah Ke'esh. What earlier we said Torah is compared to rain, but now we're saying Torah is compared to fire. Shne'emar Halo Kod Zarai Ke'esh. It's a verse in Yirmiyahu. My word is compared to fire, says Hashem. Lomar Lecha Ma Esh Eino Dolek Yachid Af Divrei Torah Eino Mitkaimin B'Yachid. In other words, just like if you have a stick, right, and you want to start a fire, I mean, unless it happens to be a non-safety match. Remember those? I wish you could buy those. Like, why did they stop making them? Because they would just spontaneously combust? I don't know. But they were the coolest thing. I remember when I was in a Boy Scout, I had a box of them. You had to light them on, you know, like in the old movies, like the old Sam Spade movies. You light it on your bottom of your shoe. But like if you have a stick in the Boy Scouts, you can't do anything with it. How do you start a fire? By rubbing two sticks together, right? It's the interaction of two that creates heat, that creates fire, that creates light, that creates warmth, right? But one alone, you can't do it. So that's why Torah is compared to fire, because it takes two to tango. It takes two to Torah. Right? You have to, the learning is always Jewish learning, even though, you know, you sit at home and you read the Chumash, you absolutely fulfill the requirement of Talmud Torah. However God keeps the books. I always imagine it, you remember the meter in the taxi? In other words, when you're driving in a taxi, the meter is running. When you're stopped in traffic, the meter is also running. It just runs at a slower rate, right? Because it's not fair to charge you. If you're stuck in traffic, it's not fair to charge you, right? In other words, the cost of the taxi ride is not a function of the amount of time the trip takes. It's a function of the distance the trip takes with an added-in amount to factor in for long delays to traffic. But there are two different rates that apply, right? The meter runs slower when you're standing still in traffic. So like you come to a shiur, you learn with a chavrusa, the meter is running. You sit at home and you learn by yourself. Maybe the meter is running, but it's not the same kind of Talmud Torah. That's why Torah is compared to. That's why Torah is compared to fire. V'after v'Torah, ein mitkamin b'yichidi. And the words of Torah somehow are not preserved or long-lasting if they take place alone. Torah is always dialogical. It's always in conversation. What, after all, is there a mitzvah to learn Torah? What's the mitzvah to learn Torah? I mean, it sounds so counterintuitive, right? We know that the most important mitzvah is Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. According to the Rambam, at least, if you look at the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah, there is no mitzvah to learn Torah. There is one mitzvah to study and teach Torah. Learning Torah and teaching Torah. You know, in English, it's obscured because they're two different words. To learn is one activity and to teach is a different activity. But in Hebrew, you can see how these are really two sides of the same coin. Lilmod ulilamed. What is it in German? What are the two words in German? Are they the same or are they different? That is lernen, at least in Yiddish, lernen is to learn. Lernen und lernen. Lernen. Are they etymologically connected? Yeah. So in other words, in German, it's more akin to Hebrew and Yiddish, unlike in English. The Rambam says there's one mitzvah, to learn Torah and to teach Torah. If you learn Torah, you have to teach Torah. The purpose of learning Torah is so that you will be enabled to teach it, ideally in the most important relationship of parents and children. V'shinantam levanecha v'dibartabam. But there's no independent mitzvah of learning Torah divorced from teaching Torah. So the Rav, very famously, Rabbi Soloveitchik said as follows. You know, in the morning, you're not allowed to study Torah before you say Birkat HaTorah. You know, sometimes you wake up, it's before, you know, really you shouldn't do too much before you go to shul. You shouldn't do too much before you daven in the morning. But sometimes, let's say you have a minyan that starts at whatever time the minyan starts, and you wake up early, so, you know, there's nothing to do until it's time to go to minyan anyway, and you want to learn a little chumash, you want to learn a little gemara, so you have to, you get up, you wash the tilat yadayim, you brush your teeth, and you should say Birkat HaTorah before you start learning Torah, even though you won't be davening the rest for a while, because you can't learn Torah until you say Birkat HaTorah. But the halacha is, if you're maharher b'divrei Torah, if all you're doing is thinking about Torah, you know, there are people like this. They go to sleep at night, they're thinking about Torah. They wake up in the morning, they're thinking about Torah. Right? Maybe if you're a teacher and you're preoccupied with the lessons you have to be giving, so you do. This has happened to me that I've had, like, in my dream, I prepared a shi'ur in my sleep. Meaning I was thinking about what I had to be teaching, and in my dream I was teaching it, and sometimes you can come to, like, an interesting insight even in your dreams. But you wake up in the morning, and you start thinking about the class you have to give. So how can you do that before you say Birkat HaTorah? So the halacha is, the Shulchan Aruch says, that if you're maharher b'divrei Torah, if all you're doing is thinking about it, but not actually speaking about it, you can do that before you say Birkat HaTorah. And if you are maharher b'divrei Torah, you somehow, in fact, do fulfill the mitzvah of Torah study. So how is it possible that you can be doing the mitzvah of Torah study before you've said Birkat HaTorah? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, indeed, you do fulfill some level of Torah study through mere kind of mental cognition, by thinking about it. You know, let's say you, like, memorized, they say that, like, I think of Moshe Feinstein, like, you know, he'd memorized, you know, everything. Like, he knew all of Shas Bal Peh. So he'd have to go to weddings, and he'd have to go to bar mitzvahs, and he'd have to go to, you know, the yeshiva dinner, and he'd have to go to this event and that event and this fundraiser and the other thing, and he'd have to sit up there on the dais, and he'd sit there kind of like looking out into space, and he was learning. He was in the middle of Bava Kama Daf Lamed Zayin Omer Aleph. Right? It was Maharher B'Divrei Torah, because he had it all in his head. So in fact, you are Mekayeh in Divrei Torah, but it's on such a lower level that you can do it without saying Birkat HaTorah, because it's an imperfect or an incomplete fulfillment of the study of Torah, because it's not dialogical. It's not bechavruta. It's not in the company of another person. All Torah study is meant to potentially be Torah teaching. So if all you're doing is thinking in your head, you can't teach someone that way. We figured out how somebody can teach other people without being in the same room. That seems to be working. We have not yet figured out a way for me to just mentally telepathy send what I'm thinking into your head. And since merely thinking about Torah cannot fulfill teaching of Torah, when you study Torah in that manner, you can get away without saying Birkat HaTorah because it's an incomplete fulfillment of.
But Jeff, there's in between the two. There's thinking about Torah. There's also teaching Torah on the other extreme. There's also opening up a Gemara, a Chumash, and learning without.
Yeah, the Rishonim, not just the Rishonim, in the medieval world, when people read, they always read out loud. And in fact, many Balei Musar and many Poskim say, when you're at home just doing the Parsha, you should say the words out loud. Because that transforms it psychologically. Now, we don't do that.
In Hebrew, we have Koreh means both, to read and to call.
But to read out loud. Right.
It's Koreah b'Torah, not to read the Torah. There's no other word for reading other than reading out loud.
Kriyat Shema. What do we learn? What do we learn about Kriyat Shema? That you have to say. We learned this in Megillah last year, right? In Kriyat Shema, you can't say Kriyat Shema just thinking in your head. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem. The words have to, even if you're all alone, the words have to come out of your mouth and be audible to your ear, right? An ideal, even though, look, some people don't do it. If you're like on a subway, maybe people are going to look at you a little strange. You're sitting there with your Gemara reading out loud. But in the pre-modern era, to read meant to read out loud. And if they saw the idea of a silent library where everyone is sitting there is a modern idea, right? The libraries of Oxford and Cambridge of old in the Middle Ages looked probably something more like our Batei Midrash, where a person could be sitting by himself over the Gemara, singing the Gemara, zogging the Gemara. Right? So that's the point of this idea of the dialogue. Even when you're alone, you're never alone. Your Torah study is always meant to be in the imagined company of the one you are teaching it to. V'hainu de'amar Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, mai dechtiv cherev al habadim v'no'alu. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that there's a sword on the badim, the people who are arrogant or are boastful or something like that, who become foolish, right? The arrogant become fools, and there's a kind of sword on their neck. What does that mean? Cherev al soneim shel talmidei chachamim. This is a warning to the. This is a euphemism. The enemies of the Talmidei Chachamim are themselves, meaning it's the Talmidei Chachamim themselves who are not acting properly. There's a kind of a sword of Damocles is hanging above them. She'oskin bad bebad b'Torah, right? Badim in the pasuk badim means. People who are somehow improper, somehow arrogant. So the Gemara kind of makes a play on words. Bad, bad means one by one, all alone. So anybody who studies Torah alone, in isolation, has this sword hanging over them, v'no'al, and they become fools. They become tipshim. They become idiots. Right? V'lo od ela shemitapshim. They grow foolish. Shene'amar v'no'alu. This word v'no'alu means to become stupid, to become foolish. In other words, studying all by yourself. There are a few cases there are a few cases where private study was indicated. But generally speaking, somebody who thinks I'm going to study, I'm going to learn it all by myself, that's the path to idiocy, to becoming a moron. There's a story about Rav Zalman. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg passed away a few months ago. Rav Zalman Nechemia was really one of the great, great poskim of our generation. So according to the story, he was recognized as a great ilui. And when he got to Panovich, Rav Yoshev told him, "Don't go." In Panovich, they have the base medrash with thousands of people hanging around, and then they have like a library, you know, where they have like the overflow of the books. And the library is more of like a library, like what we recognize as a library. And Rav Yoshev told him, "Don't go to the base medrash, because if you go to the base medrash, everyone will realize that you're the Gadol Hador." He was still very young. Everyone will realize that, you know, how much you know, and they won't leave you alone. They'll keep coming to you. They'll ask you questions. They'll want to talk to you. You won't have any time for yourself to develop. So go sit alone and learn by yourself in the library. And if you have a question, come to me and I'll answer. But that's an exceptional case. Maybe our Gemara is talking about, you know, the non-exceptional cases. Then the Gemara has to explain, like this word no'alu. Steve, where do you recognize the word no'alu from?
No'alu, it's in Slichot, right?
It's in the Yom Kippur davening. V'lo ot l'shechutin. People who learn by themselves, not with a chevruta, or in the company of others, are sinners. K'tiv hacha no'alu, k'tiv hatam asher no'alnu v'asher chatanu. That's the pasuk. That's the pasuk from Bamidbar that we use as part of the refrain of the Slichot and as part of the Yom Kippur Davening, right? We've become foolish and we've sinned. In other words, our foolishness is the root of our sin, because we don't. If you're a fool, you don't recognize wisdom, and if you don't recognize wisdom, so then you end up sinning. The Iboy Esema, and if you want, you can say there's another pasuk. The no'alu sare so'an is a pasuk about in Yeshayahu that the princes of this place called So'an became idiots, became fools. The hita'u et Mitzrayim, right? And they caused Mitzrayim to sin. But this idea that foolishness and sin are related is prevalent throughout. Oh, wait. I see. I have trouble reading off the screen, so I read out of the I read off the Gemara that I keep here on the desk in front of me. So I didn't see that we here. Let's just do a little bit more. Omar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, Lama Nimshalu Divrei Torah Ke'etz. So first we compare Torah to, we compare rain to Tchet HaMetim, and then rain to Torah, and then Torah to water, and then Torah to fire, and now Torah to trees. Shneamar Eitz Chaim Hi L'Machazikim Ba. The Torah is a tree of life to those who cling to it. So just like what when you're building a fire, right? How do you start the fire? You make like a big bonfire for Lag BaOmer. How do you start it? You take a little kindling, right? You light one little stick on fire, and that can set, you know, a big log aflame. So just like the small, one little match can burn down a whole house, right? So just like the small can ignite the big, af tamidei chachamim ktanim mechadadim et hagdolim. V'haynu da'amar Rabbi Chanina, harbei lamadati mirabotai, v'chavarai yoter mirabotai, v'talmidai yoter kulam. I've learned much from my teachers, and I've learned even more from my peers, and I've learned the most from my students. The idea that really the best way to learn anything is to teach it. That's because in order to be prepared to teach, you have to learn it through the prism. You know, it's when you're learning on your own, it's easy to be lazy. If something doesn't fit, if something doesn't make sense, you know what you can do? You know what's the best way to make that question go away?
Go on to the next thing.
Just move on. Just keep moving. But if you know, you have to prepare the Gemara. And if something's not clear, you know Dansk is going to say, wait a second, what do those words mean? So you can't get away with it. You have people that are gonna check you. But just beyond that idea that teaching something is the best way to understand something. So that's the nature that's the nature of Jewish learning, right? I remember when I got to Yeshiva University, after not having a formal Jewish education, after having been a public school student, I remember being struck by this. Here you go into this university setting where you study Torah in the morning with the rabbis, and then you study whatever your field of study is in the afternoon with the professors. The idea that the professor is the sage on the stage, is this font of wisdom, is this expert, is this, right, it was a given. But in the context of the Gemara Shir, you know, we had rabbis who were Gedolei Olam, who were like really among the most learned Talmud scholars around. But in the give and take of the Shi'ur, the most novice student can suggest something, can push back. It's there's a reason that the Gemara compares Torah study to the arena, like the gladiators, like the two swords knocking at each other. Right? You can act with a certain amount of chutzpah inside the shi'ur, which you'd never address a teacher that way outside of a shi'ur. A teacher can say something, and a student can say, "How can you say that? It isn't, after all, look, the dialogue that's recorded on the pages of the Talmud." But one rabbi says something else, another person says, "No, there's another source. It goes against it." It's in the rough and tumble of the learning. A young kid, an 18-year-old kid, can, you know, attack the suggestion of the Rebbe, and he's welcome to do so, right? That kind of the rough and tumble of the learning is where truth is determined. There are very clear guidelines. There's a very clear hierarchy. There's very clear respect flows, you know, up the chain. But because there is so much, because it's given in a context where there really is so much respect. So that creates an environment for the free exchange of ideas, which in the end improves the mind of the teacher. Mitamidai yoter mikulam. We're going to come back. We're leaving this in the middle. I hope to actually finish more tonight. But we're leaving this in the middle. But I'll just draw your attention to the famous agadot of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who were teacher-student, and then peers, and then brothers-in-law. Two very different characters, two very different approaches to Torah study. If you have time, take a look at the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Dalet Omer Aleph, 84a, with the famous Agadah of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, because it resonates here with our Gemara. In our Gemara, the Torah is compared at one point to water, and at another point to rain. Later, it's going to be compared to water, but rain and water, of course, are related. And it's compared to fire. So take a look, if you have time, take a look at that Gemara in Bava Metzia, 84a, 84a and b. To see where fire and water come in there, and how the personalities of these two Talmidei Chachamim kind of resonate with the ideas that we saw here. Agnon took these ideas, the ideas from our Gemara in Ta'anit and the story of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and spun them into one of his greatest stories called Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Shehayu Be'ireinu, two scholars who were in our town, in English, in the English edition, which tells of like the epic clash between two Talmidei Chachamim. But that idea of Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, that idea is taken from the lines in our Gemara about Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Mechadim Ze'edze, right? What happens in that clash of ideas between Talmidei Chachamim? So I commend that to your attention as well. Yes. I'm just looking at these chats. So Sheila asks that a Torah study alone without a chavruta is not on the same level. All things being equal, that's true. There could be that there's some individuals for whom it's better to focus on their own private study, but generally speaking, the Gemara is saying that the best form of Torah study is in pair or is in community, right? The idea of a community of people learning is very important for all types of reasons. Not the least of which is that it will lead to a better result, to better understanding, to deeper understanding, but also because it has a positive effect on the world, it has a positive effect on a community. And it's unfortunate that we're meeting virtually. It's something very positive that, you know, for most of us, once a week we would gather in the shul, and people knew those lights were on the shul because people set priority on coming together and learning together. That says something about a community that sustained such a thing for so many years and so many different shuls and Bate Midrash, wherever they are. But on the first level, it has to do with the idea that the learning is better, the understanding is better, the insights are deeper. You reach truth in a better way if it's done together than if you're doing it alone. But there are all different types of chavruta, right? Not every chavruta is two people sitting on opposite ends of a desk. There are chavruta that take place, you know, through correspondence. There are chavruta that takes place through competition. Think about Lahavdil. Think about, you know, a few weeks ago they announced all the Nobel Prizes, particularly in the sciences. This is often true. Often the Nobel in physics or chemistry or medicine will go to two or three people that are working in different places. They're working in different universities or different laboratories, but they're working on the same problem. And it's the idea of kinat sofrim or kinat madanim tarbe chokhma, right? That the competition, that they're working, they're each working to try to find the vaccine against the virus or something, right? They share the results of their research, but they're all working to be the first to cross the line. That leads to greater knowledge. That expands the human endeavor. That's also a form of chavruta, even though each person is in his own or her own laboratory. What the Gemara is talking about is, you know, what we seem to recognize as chavruta, people studying together, one on one in small groups in a community. But that is the prime way of Torah study if it's available to you. Nowadays, we have web yeshiva, we have all these other things. People wherever they are, everybody can have a chavruta. It's not like it once was where people were alone. Okay.
Go ahead.
See you next week.
Yeah, first of all.